Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Well, we continue to build momentum. YouTube went pretty nuts for us last month, so please check it out, like, subscribe. We are now proactively building the community because that leads to even bigger and better opportunities for the podcast, which is really going from, well, step change to step change. Now, in all of our lives, there are a number of moments which are seminal. Perhaps they are the unlock moments for us. And do we even realize that they are an unlock moment at the time that they're happening? I don't know. So like all of these wonderful episodes, I need to speak to somebody who is wiser than me. So no pressure, Gary, but you're going to come back to me and we're talking to the wonderful Gary Crotaz, who has an interesting background. That's very British, isn't it? So he's a medical doctor. He's a former professional ballroom dancer. He's a speaker. He's an author. And like me, he's a crazy podcast host. So trust me, you don't want to miss this episode. Come back to me just after this. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. So Gary, it's a huge warm welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks so much for inviting me to your beautiful studio space.
Now, you are a seasoned veteran at podcasting, but this is your first ever studio-based podcast. Am I right?
I'm almost certainly that is true. Can't remember another one. And it's so great to be in this kind of space and actually face-to-face, in person with a real person.
With a real person and another podcaster.
I know.
Which
I
is great. And we're all branded as well. So if anyone can see that, we are proudly actually collaborating the Unlock Moment and the Leadership Enigma. And the Unlock Moment really is the direction of travel for this conversation. But there's always a great story before we get to that part. So Gary, I did a very modest introduction for you, but you're going to have to help us understand this eclectic mix of wonderment.
I don't understand it really. So I first thought I was going to be a doctor. So I went to medical school, spent 8 years in medical school. In my late 20s, figured out, which we'll come back to in Unlock Moments, but figured out that that wasn't actually a path I wanted to pursue. So about a year from finishing, I had this moment of realization, maybe this isn't what I want to do. Maybe I could do something different.
Yep.
And so I decided at that time to pivot, and I moved into consulting, went into business management consulting, which I did for about 8 years. And in my late 30s, figured out that I should probably get a proper job at some point, and got approached by somebody that I've worked with before who worked in retail, and I got brought into mothercare. And I'd never worked in retail before. And I often today work with people in their late 30s going, I've had my time, I've made, you know, my opportunities for choices have gone. Yep. And I went, they really haven't. You know, you can still start new things at different times.
We're not too old.
No. And I was at mothercare and then at Selfridges Group in retail over a course of about 7 years, in the middle of a very sort of turbulent, transforming time in retail with the high street dying and a bunch of other challenges, which is expanding, I guess, for people, but also quite bruising. And the last part of that was the beginning of the COVID pandemic.
Right.
And so in 2020, I really felt like I'd done my time. And I thought, if I was my own coach, and I was doing a bit of side hustle coaching at the time, if I was my own coach, what would I tell myself to do? And the answer was, do the bit of your work and your life that you love the most.
Your passion.
Which was about one-to-one conversations with people, helping them to grow and develop. The secret double life in parallel, as you talked about, is the ballroom dancing.
Yes.
So I started ballroom dancing at the age of 4 years old. So I was one of those very cute little, cute then, not cute now, little boys in a white shirt and a black bow tie, you know, dancing around the floor. And it's something that I'd done all my life. And then I met my wife, Mildred, to form a dancing partnership in my late 20s. And so whilst we were doing that sort of consulting career, I was doing retail, you know, we were building first an amateur career, then a professional career, and we ended up traveling around the world, going to world and European championships, turned professional, and ended up training actually in Italy in this world-leading academy of competitive ballroom dance. And if any of you were fans of Strictly Come Dancing, yes. A lot of the Strictly dancers trained with us in that academy. So people like Joanne Clifton and Giovanni Panice, right. And Graziana De Prima, all of that group.
They were
all
peers.
Together. Yeah, exactly. We all trained together in an industrial unit in a tiny village about an hour north of Bologna. And it was one of those places that I think now about getting really, really high caliber people to come together and learn from each other and grow each other.
Yep.
And this was an environment where people were flying in from Russia, from Canada, from across Europe, and coming together in this little, very unassuming space. And you walked in the door, and of the top 12 couples in the world, six were in the room.
Wow.
You know, so it was really a bit like going to Kenya or Ethiopia to do distance running. We showed up and we're like, we are so far behind the caliber of those really, really top people, but I can't tell you how much it unlocked our capability. So in 2020, I turned into coaching and speaking and writing a book and eventually podcasting as well. And I say to people now that I've spent, you know, many years of my life in consulting and in corporate environments and leadership in that conventional sense. But actually, probably a bigger part of how I think about real high performance leadership comes from my experience, in my case as a dancer, but really as a high performance athlete or in an environment with high performance athletes. And
right.
That mindset and the approach that they take to really get themselves to be not only really good at what they do, but one of the very best in the world at what they do. And I think that is such a fascinating thing to explore. So
yeah.
I guess today that's kind of my focus, is like the kind of people that I work with are typically people who are trying to do something which in their environment, in their world, is quite extraordinary.
So that's an incredible array of experiences. And we'll come on to talk about what you mean by the unlocked moments.
Mm-hmm.
But we are a product of the sum of the parts, aren't we? So I've had an eclectic background. You've had an eclectic background. So are you still dancing, or is that something?
No. No. So we retired about 10 years ago. I'm still involved in the dance world. My wife's still involved in the dance world. I'm on the board of the Rombert School and an organization called Rombert Grades, which is like contemporary dance grades for teenagers coming through.
Right.
That kind of thing. So I'm still involved, but way inflexible.
Do you watch Strictly?
Used to. And then there just came a time where it felt like it's kind of the same.
Busman's Holiday.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. So what's the passion now for the work that you're doing, for the coaching, this focus on writing? And we'll talk about the idea of mindset and the unlocked moment. How comes everything has crystallized in relation to this direction of travel? What's pushing you?
That's a really interesting question. It not strategic is the answer. That I'm understanding, the more I do it, I understand more why I do it. And I think I realized, particularly through the podcast, talking, you know, on the podcast, I've got to meet some amazing world-leading coaches, world-leading leaders of all different types. And somebody said to me, you're really curious about people. And I was like, that's interesting. Sometimes other people, and I find this, other people have to name something for you to help you figure out. Somebody said to me recently, said something about conversations for you. It's like there's something about the connection in conversations. So I never went, you know, let me get a piece of paper and figure out what my most productive or most, you know, I don't know, highest earning future would be. I can tell you that would probably be going back into retail and trying to, you know, help retailers, you know, deal with the challenges of today. I love talking to people, and I love working with people, particularly people where there's just that connection of they're trying to do something extraordinary, and I'm fascinated by how to unlock that in them. You know, so I feel I've always been somebody that has quite sort of followed my instinct quite a lot. I guess that's why I've taken quite a eclectic path. I've never sort of been a person going, there is my end goal, what are the five steps I need to do to get there? You know, much more.
And some people are able to do that.
Exactly.
They pick the target, reverse engineer it, and success.
Yeah. But in reality, and this is something that I wrote about in the book, when you think about your direction, what really matters is the choice you have to make tomorrow.
Right.
So all the time we're faced with choices. Do I return that call from the headhunter who called me? Do I go and have a conversation with my boss about the fact that I'm not that comfortable in my role? Do I ask for a different sort of balance to enable me to have the home life that I want?
Yes.
That's the choice you actually need to make. It may or may not be influenced by some sense of where you want to get in the future. But often we end up focusing on the future and forgetting about the day-to-day. And then you turn around to people and say, are you happy in what you're doing? deeply unhappy. Yeah. When are you going to be happy? 10 years' time when I figure this all out.
A lot of that is a complete myth, though, isn't it? And I'm going to actually do an episode with a psychiatrist who I know, and it's actually, why do we keep lying to ourselves?
Right.
Which is
right.
so true, perhaps, right. of every human and every leader. So a subject for another day. We share something then. We probably share the insatiable curiosity
right.
that we feed off the back of perhaps the work that we do and certainly the podcast.
Right.
And that's how you and I connected in relation to maybe initially the podcast and mm-hmm. then obviously the work that you do and your crazy background as well, which I like. I'm always drawn to slightly eclectic backgrounds. So that's for you is the direction of travel. That's the makeup that you have. I want to really talk about the passion and direction you have at the moment. Thank you so much. I've obviously got the first book. This is the first book you wrote.
Yeah, yes, that's right. I'm currently working on the second.
The idea mindset, and thank you very much indeed. Tell me a little bit about kind of this book and how you then progressed on to helping people as regards breakthrough moments and then that how's focused in on the unlock moment. So there's a process here, isn't there, for you? I suppose you're going through a learning process. Tell me how this started and let's take it to the unlock moment.
So in September 2020,
yep.
I finished my role on the exec team at Selfridges Group. I was in an interim role and I came out of it and I went, I think I want to start coaching Journey because I've been thinking about it for a long, long time and never kind of got round to figuring out how to do it. Somebody said to me, what's your training? And I went, that's a good question. Had never thought about it. Found some training and got on the program at Henley Business School.
Oh, quickly. Yeah, I know. Well,
but I'd already been starting working with people. And I always had this view that the stuff that we'd done with companies, helping them to figure out what they stand for, what's important to them, what's the long-term goals, how are they going to get there, what help do they need, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I was like, you could just do that for people. And yes, maybe I could help and go on that journey, but also just going through that kind of journey with all of the sort of exercises and tools that we know from the business or the corporate world is really useful. So I'd already, before I'd started my formal coaching training, started sort of writing these homework exercises for some of the people I was working with. And then I foolishly posted on LinkedIn and I was like, I've decided I'm going to start my coaching training and I'm going to turn this into a book. And about 25,000 people responded on LinkedIn and went, yes, you should definitely do that. And then I was like, now I have to do it.
You were committed.
I know. And I hate writing. And I don't read many books at all. And so
says the doctor.
It was one of the reasons
I'm the
why
same, and I'm the lawyer. Right. So right. What are we like? We're not an advert. We're not an advert.
I got stuck years and years and years ago in the middle of my PhD thesis, which was the most terrible part of my life. So I built myself a spreadsheet, and I went, by Christmas, I will have written the first draft, whether good or bad.
Yeah.
This is the number of words per day I must write,
okay.
whether good or bad. And so in about 40 days, I turned out the first draft, which wasn't good. And my editor, who's brilliant, Rachel Kenny, had me basically throw away most of it and rewrite it in human language. But the book came out, and the book is a book of exercises and self-reflection. So it's like a coaching course to put myself out of a job before I really got started in my coaching career.
Right.
And I love it because coaching is a really expensive thing to do and therefore only accessible to a certain sort of echelon of people typically. And I went, well, but anybody should be able to, you know, do some self-reflection, help themselves figure out the path ahead.
Yeah.
And so that's really where the idea mindset came from. And if you read the book, you'll see it's in sort of six stages and it takes you through a structured journey of reflecting on who you are, what your strengths are, what your values are, what your plan ahead is, what help you need, what might trip you up, how you're going to tell people about your journey ahead, what's the emotional journey of change, all that kind of stuff. So then I started working with people through the journey, and this guy called Sam Horton, who became episode number one on the Unlock Moment podcast. He's an actor, really great actor, but at the time we were working together, he was an actor in pub theatres, you know, not earning any money at all. And
like
he
the
was,
life of most actors.
Right, exactly.
Tough.
And he was facing into this dilemma of, do I pursue success or pursue happiness? Because all of his acting colleagues were saying, you need to get a bigger part, you need to get a bigger show, you need to get in the ensemble, then you need to understudy somebody, then you need to get on the West End stage. And he was like, but I just love acting. And right. I don't know that if I pursue that success path, will I have to make choices that mean I don't love it anymore?
The reality kicks in.
So we were working together over quite a long period of time.
Yep.
And he texted me one morning at 4 a.m. And he texted me and he said, I've got it. And I went, what? Because I hadn't turned off my beeps on my phone.
Lesson to self.
Right. And he said, I want to pursue happiness. what do you think? And then I said a really non-coaching thing, which was yes. And he said, why are you so sure? I said, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. You just texted me.
Yeah.
And I reflected on that moment and I went, that's not a moment. That's a time when he wasn't sitting down doing work. He wasn't thinking about it. Something really important that he'd been trying to figure out for months suddenly was like, now I know. For him, what I want to pursue happiness meant was, when I go to the audition, I go to the audition because I genuinely want to be in that show, not because it's the biggest show I can get. I'm going to sing the song that I feel represents me, not the one that I think they want to hear. And what was really interesting, he's just come on recently and recorded a follow-up about 18 months, 2 years on. People started seeing his authentic self and he became more and more and more successful. So he went from pub theatre. He's now in the ensemble cast at Phantom in the West End.
Oh, wow. It's
the biggest job he's ever got. And so I thought, oh, breakthrough moments. And then I thought back to me leaving medical school. So age 27, the moment when I knew something I didn't know before, and that's the unlock moment, I was walking down the corridor in my lab. And I had been struggling for years going, I'm doing this journey. You're on a bit of a conveyor belt in medical school. I don't love it, but maybe that's my fault. Maybe I haven't found the thing that I would like, whatever it is. And the thought that came into my head was, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. What didn't come into my head was, you're going to leave. It didn't come into my head, you're going to become a strategy consultant. You're going to be successful. I didn't know any of that stuff. I just knew, for me, I had permission to change. And I was like, that's my unlock moment. So then I started talking to people and saying, you know, you're going on this journey of change and growth, but what is a moment in your life or career when you remember exactly where you were, who you were with, what you were thinking, when this breakthrough moment of clarity happened? And what I discovered many things, but one of the things that was really fascinating is that when you say to people, what are the memorable moments? What are the meaningful moments in your life or career? And they will say things like, you know, the day I got married, the day my, you know, first child was born, the day I walked out of my job. And then I go, what was the day when you knew you were going to do that? Oh, that was 6 years before,
right,
when I was having a conversation with my boss. And my boss said, I'm not really sure that you're ready for the next level. And I went, I don't think you understand who I am. And they go, I knew from that point on that at some point I was going to leave. I actually did leave 6 years later, but the unlock moment was that moment.
Right.
And so you get into these stories that people don't normally talk about, sometimes don't think much about.
Or don't realize.
Don't realize. Sometimes have never really thought about. My most downloaded episode is with a coach in the US called Micah Librand, who's one of Gallup's top coaches. Her unlock moment, she said, I was driving, this was 15 years before we had the conversation, she said, I was driving my Honda Accord in the rain down Rosa Parks Way in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I came to the stop at the stoplight that I normally stop at, and in front of me was a Jeep, and on the back of the Jeep, and you think how vivid this story is, on the back of the Jeep was a spare wheel with a spare wheel cover, and on the wheel cover it said, life is good. And she went, and mine isn't, but I should feel it is.
Right.
And she was in a US broadcast career. She was doing really, really well. And it suddenly went, I should feel life is good and I don't. And coming out of that, she ended up doing a complete career change. And everything that she's built now came from that moment. And I talked to her recently and she said 18 months on, she's understanding unlocked moments more because she's really now reflecting on that time. She said, that's still my moment. That's still my time in the rain at the stoplight in my Honda Accord looking at that wheel cover saying life is good.
So how are we describing an unlocked moment then to people listening and watching this?
So not everyone's had one. And sometimes people have had two or three, but probably not 10.
Right.
It's a moment when you think back often 10, 20, 30 years and you remember exactly where you were, when and who you were with, what you were thinking, when you suddenly knew something you didn't know before. It's often not a time when you actually make a decision. It's often not a time when you take action. It's a time when you knew something. Sometimes for people, their unlock moment is associated with time. So for example, somebody might say, I turned 30 and I suddenly went, I need to do something with my life, because they're looking at the decade ahead and going, oh, crikey, you know, time's moving on. Sometimes it's to do with a health diagnosis. So one of my guests, she said, my husband was diagnosed with stage 3 bowel cancer at the age of 40. And you would think that the thought in my head would be, we have to stop everything to focus on treatment.
Yep.
But actually, they had a conversation together and they said, we always felt like there will always be time to do the things we want to do. But actually, the thought in my head was, maybe there isn't time. And therefore, if there's something we want to do, we should do it now. And they founded an online retail business
right
in the middle of his cancer treatment, because they were like, we've always wanted to do it. Now is the time. And that moment of, maybe there isn't always time, that was the moment of knowing.
Of clarity.
Something. The connection with the unlocked moment is when people start to look at those moments, they think about something that is like, I've discovered it's a lens on your deepest sense of purpose. So there's a lot of people work around the idea of purpose and purpose-driven leadership. And there are a lot of things that people can do, things like Simon Sinek's Start With Why. It's an amazing book and an amazing concept, his TED Talk. It can sometimes be quite superficial for people, because they'll go into a workshop and everybody's trying to design their why statements. It's a useful thing to do. It's a nice thing to do. What the unlocked moment gets to is something typically that is much deeper, much more profound, sometimes very emotional. I've spoken twice on stage where I've done like a fireside chat with somebody, and we're demonstrating that conversation of the unlocked moment over the course of sort of 5 to 10 minutes. And on those two occasions, the person I was speaking to broke down in tears.
Right.
Because it's such a profound moment for them, and sometimes one that they haven't thought so much about. I was doing a workshop recently for some executive MBA students at one of the UK's leading business schools. And we did a little demo. So somebody from the audience, who I'd met for a couple of minutes before the conversation, came down to the front, and we had a 5-10 minute conversation. And I asked him two questions that really unlock this. The first is, if we wanted to understand the person you are today, where would we need to start in your story? And it's not about telling the story. It's about knowing whether you need to start at the age of 4 or the age of 12 or the age of 23. And he talked about, you know, in his early teenage years, something. And then the second question was, do you think about, when I talk about a moment of remarkable clarity, what do you think about? And he said, well, I remember sitting in the front seat of my car, and I was talking to my friend in my late teenage years, and he said this thing, and I suddenly figured this thing out that's quite important to me. And then he turned around to me and he said, that doesn't relate at all to what I do now. You know, so I don't understand the connection of the unlocked moment and those questions to my purpose today. And I just turned around to an audience of about 150 people. And I said, do you see it? Because I see it. And they all went, yeah, we see it. And he went, I can't see it at all. And 45 minutes after the session, he came up to me and he said, I've just understood it. Because about 30 people have come up to me and they said, this connection, this is what we saw. And he said, I've never connected those dots before,
right?
And now I have. And suddenly it helps people to understand something really fundamental about who they are. I know, you know, your background in criminal law, there's a guy called Dean Miles, who's a world-leading coach, who came on. His first job was as an undercover agent in the Drug Enforcement Agency in the US.
Right.
And then he left the DEA and went into pharma, became a very senior sales executive, and then mid-career decided, you know, like many people, to form a coaching practice and leave that corporate world behind. And he was telling these stories, and then he said this thing. He said, when I'm working with those, you know, undercover in that DEA environment, there's something about, you know, fundamentally good people who've made some really bad choices. And he said, but for some of them, there was some sort of fundamental taking accountability. That's interesting. And then I said to him, well, that's interesting, because now you're a coach, and one of the things that you're doing is holding people deeply accountable.
Yes.
There's a thread there. And he went, I've never made the connection. He said, I've made the connection between my pharma sales leadership role and coaching.
Yeah.
I've never put together before that what I was doing as an undercover agent was also about accountability. And those are the kinds of breakthrough moments that help people to go, now I really understand. I'm not just doing this because it's a nice thing to do, because I find it quite fun, you know, and in 5 years' time I'm going to do something different. I have to be here doing this thing. And that's really what makes the unlock moment different. I never knew that. I never knew that I was having an unlock moment at the time. I never knew that when I started the podcast, that that's what we were going to find in people's stories.
Right.
Now, you know, 130 episodes in, it's just a really different place. And with some people, not everyone, but some people that I talk to, I'm like, I am understanding more about this the more we talk about these kind of moments.
It sounds like there's a combination of the conscious and the subconscious. And
yes,
they have to join up in some way, because there's things that people obviously remember and maybe have thought about. But you're also, I think, telling me that there are things that they hadn't really thought about. And subconsciously, I'm assuming that may have been the 4 o'clock moment for the example that you gave, that subconsciously something is going on. And then there is a eureka moment or a connection that has come about through that process. Am I right in saying there's got to be a conscious and a subconscious element here of these unlock moments?
I think it's exactly right. And I think that there's a thing I wrote in the Idea Mindset book, which is you can't think to a deadline.
Right.
So it's my fundamental belief that you can do actions and tasks to a deadline. You need to, you know, file your papers by Friday. You can get it done. You know, you might have to work late to do it, but you can get it done. But if I said to you, figure out really what your underlying purpose is by Friday, you might form a point of view and write something down.
Yep.
Is it the real thing? I don't know.
Or is it just the thing you landed on by Friday?
Correct, correct. So I think when you're thinking about coaching and development, a lot of the work and the progress happens between the coaching sessions for that reason. And somebody came on the podcast and we were talking about exactly this point, and he said, you have to busy your conscious mind with other stuff to allow your unconscious mind to unfettered do the thing it's going to do to make these connections, to bring things together. And then I was like, that's interesting. When I was talking to one of the most profound conversations I've had is with a woman who was outed as gay against her will, living in Mississippi.
Right.
And her family and her church and her community shunned her, and she was forced to move away to Florida. And she was living in Florida with her partner. And she said, my unlock moment was a day when I was looking out the kitchen window in my house in Florida, and I suddenly went, I have to go home. I have to go home to Mississippi and face into this thing. I can't run away from
business.
And I've always thought about that, the unlock moment that happened when you were doing the washing up, looking out the kitchen window. And it is that thing about the unconscious needs to be freed to make these connections. My unlock moment was walking down a corridor, not sitting in front of a computer or a piece of paper trying to figure out my plan. So actually, there's something about, and Sam, when he was talking about it, he said, you have to be comfortable in the uncertainty, and you have to live with the discomfort and the uncertainty of not knowing, and not force a knowing that's not there.
Right.
And people sometimes find that deeply frustrating, because they're going, I want to know the answer. I want to make some decisions. I want to move ahead. And then somebody awkward like me will go, give it more time.
Forgive me, Adam. So how many unlock moments do you think that you've had to date? As you say, there's not going to be 10 of them, but do you think it's just the one, or have there been a couple that have directed the journey that you're on?
I recognize probably 2 or 3. I think that people have little unlock moments, which are sort of those moments where you go, okay, I figured that bit out. But the unlock moment is much more that sort of vivid, you can put yourself right back exactly where you were.
Mm.
When we started, so we were about halfway through our professional dancing career, Mildred and I, and we'd been doing all of our training and all of our competing here in the UK.
Yeah.
And we had done a particular, you know, big championship and had another sort of disappointing result. And we went home and we were sitting next to each other that evening, frustrated about the whole thing. And we turned to each other and we both basically said the same thing, which was, we're done with this way of doing it. You know, if this is how it's going to be, it's time. You know, it's enough. I don't want to go back and have another one of those experiences, that competition, that kind of result, whatever. feeling that way because we're investing a huge amount of our own money and time in yeah. doing it. And then this thing in Italy, you know, we'd known about it for quite a long time, but it was such a sort of, we'd have to turn our lives upside down to be able to do it. And we said, well, option one is retire. Option two is see what's going on there and see if we can make some really radical decisions. And we went, that's who we are. We're the people who are going
right.
to try the radical thing, even if it's 6 months, even if it's a year. And Mildred picked up her phone and she called the principal of this academy in Italy and said, you don't know who we are, but we'd love to come and visit you and understand more about it.
Yeah.
And he said, get on the flight, be there on Monday morning, and I'll meet you there.
Oh, wow, it was as fast as that.
Right. And we turned around to our employers and we went, we want 2 days of holiday, Monday, Tuesday next week, and we managed to wangle it. And we just got on a plane and showed up. And walking through that door, I remember the first day we walked through the door, we were like, we're in the right place. Because suddenly we saw all these other people there who were just like us,
yes.
who were people going, we are going to make some quite extraordinary choices to pursue this thing that we're really passionate about. You know, for 10 years, particularly that last 5 years, we spent all our spare money on training and traveling and competing. We had no sponsorship or anything like that. There's no money in ballroom dancing, not at the level we were at. Our honeymoon was going to a training camp.
Right.
Because it was like, we don't have another week to go separately on honeymoon, and we love doing this, and when we're together, so that's our honeymoon. And yeah, we ended up traveling all over the world by, you know, whatever low-cost airline or whatever yeah. we could kind of get there.
What a great experience.
Yeah,
though.
And it was so right for us. And I think that's the thing that often when I'm working with people today, I talk about, you know, everyone is unique. Everyone has unique talents. Everyone has unique desires. But everyone else has got an opinion on who you should be or what you should do.
From an early age.
From an early age. Your parents, your teachers, your first bosses will go, these are things you're not doing very well. You know, many, many people have come on the podcast from lots of different parts of the world, lots of different cultures. They all feel like it's only their culture, but actually lots of parents go, you know, doctor, lawyer, teacher, engineer, failure. You know, those are kind of your life choices. And in reality, you know, I didn't know I was going to work in retail until my late 30s. I didn't know I was going to work in coaching until my late 40s, in my mid-40s. I didn't know I was going to launch a podcast until my mid-40s. I feel more at home in what I do now than ever in my life and career, except for in the dance studio and on the dance competition floor. And I just love it. I just love it. And I've worked with people all the way through their careers who are asking the question, what do I want to do with the next chapter? And it doesn't have to relate to my previous chapter if I don't want it to. It doesn't even have to be successful because I made the choice. You know, you've got to go in with your eyes open and go, if it's successful, that's great. If it's not successful, I'll deal with it. You know, it's that ownership.
And where does age come into this? Because obviously we're of a certain demographic and mm-hmm. we're about to have 5 generations working within organizations. So, right. you know, is there a cutoff time for the unlock moment to either happen or have an impact?
No.
I'm glad you said that, but I needed to ask.
My most esteemed coaching client, we were working together at a late stage of her career when most people would have retired, put it that way. And there was a moment in our conversations where we were talking about choices and yep. she was talking about a balance going forward and a choice between, you know, still being involved in some work things, yep. but 3 days a week, not 5 days a week, and making space and time to all the other things she wants to do, like learn a language and so on. And I remember asking this question, well, what do you want to do? And the answer was, I've never asked myself that question because it's always been, of the choices ahead of you, which one do you want to do? And she'd had extraordinary experiences and been hugely successful in her life or career. And I said, well, why not now? Why not ask that question now?
Mm.
You know, if you could do anything, what would you like to do? And she thought about it, and then she named a thing that wasn't on the list.
Right.
Wasn't on the list of things that were...
Wasn't a viable option at the time, as far as she thought.
It wasn't an option she was considering. And I said, is it a viable option? And she went, I don't know, because I never asked.
Right.
I never thought about it. A year after that conversation, she was in a new job in the White House.
Right.
And I think that came about because she found the freedom to say, what do I want? What do I want? And I tell a little of that story to people where, you know, we all feel a bit like our time, as I said before, our time for freedom and choices has gone. You know, it was in your 20s or in your 30s or in your 40s. It's always, you know, 5 years before whatever age you are now. And in reality, you know, not everybody can choose. And that's an important thing to say, that there's lots of people in life where the constraints outside of their control are very, very significant.
Yep.
But many people do have the ability to choose. I'm working with a cohort at the moment in a large city institution where we're not working with the senior leaders in the organization with lots of money and, you know, reputation and choices and so on. We're working with the most junior people in the organization. And what I find time and time again is that they discover in going through this journey, they don't have necessarily full free choice because they still have to earn enough money and they still have to, you know, have the freedom to, yeah, you know, bring up their family and in the way they want, all those kinds of things. But they generally find that they've got more control than they thought they had. They felt like they had none. And then they go, I have never actually asked my boss or asked my mentor whether there are different options. And when they do, they find that, oh, not free choices, but there are some choices and some options. Because, again, we are constrained by this this thing that's been sort of drilled into us over the years, that people have one career and there's a path to go and there are rules. And there are, but today, and particularly with the advent of technology and that kind of stuff, there is a lot more freedom and flexibility than there used to be.
Right.
You know, and I encourage people to really explore that. For the people who are the ones with extraordinary goals, they have a lot more control because it's more now, maybe than it's ever been before, a two-way contract between them and their, for example, employer, where the employer needs them as much as they need their employer. And I often say to people, think about where is the power dynamic in this relationship? You know, are you both getting something good out of this? Should you be? Are you? And really think about the dynamics of that partnership. Everybody should think about that, I think. And think about what support do I need? What help could I get? Who do I talk to? Who could I talk to about my choices and options?
Yeah.
You know, what I like about the podcast is that, and podcasts like yours too, that when people hear other people's stories, sometimes it unlocks for them. Yeah, that made me think differently. I can't tell you the number of CEOs of major organizations who've listened to Sam Horton's story about being an actor in a pub theater and choosing between success and happiness and making compromises. And people say, yeah, that's the episode that resonated with me because right. That person who I never would have met, who's in a completely different world, made choices that weren't necessarily the ones that he thought were going to make him the most money, and that's okay. So, yeah, it is okay.
So how do we help anyone listening or watching to start to think about their unlock moment? What can we do to help them?
So there are two questions to reflect on. The first is, if you were to explain to somebody who you are today by telling your story before, where would you start? And think about that moment. Is it at the age of 4 years old? Somebody came on the podcast and she said, at 4 years old was the first time I understood the meaning of the word fear. And it was to do with her relationship with her father.
Right.
And it turned into, 25 years later, a moment with her father where she said, I control my life, you don't control my life. And that gave her this massive sort of drive which drove her further future career. Somebody else said at the age of 12, my parents said to me he didn't think I was ever going to come to much. And that's driven me inside. Somebody said at the age of 18, I knew I wasn't going to be a chemist for life. But it was not until I was 28 that I was able to tell my father that I was going to change career.
Right.
You know. The second question is, what's a moment of remarkable clarity in your life or career when you remember exactly where you were, who you were with? And most of the time people go, yeah, I know when that is. They're not necessarily prepared to tell other people about that because it can be quite an emotional, quite a private, quite a personal thing. And then you say, well, so what did where I chose to start and what did what my unlock moment is tell me about who I am today? So for me, I would start at the age of four going to my first dance class because I identify as a dancer, and ultimately that's something to do with partnership and connection and conversation as a dancer and now in coaching. And that moment for me walking down the corridor was a moment when I knew something about I drive my life. It's my choice. It's my accountability. And many, many times in my career since then, I see myself doing that. I make a bold choice that many other people wouldn't make.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, because I've done it before. And sometimes it doesn't work out. And that's okay, but it's still my choice. You know, so that told me something about who I am. And when you start to put that thread together, you start to find, now I understand. I'm not in coaching and podcasting and speaking or whatever by accident, but it feels a bit like that. It feels like the choices along the way were a bit of judgment, a bit of instinct, a bit of luck. But actually, I've landed here for a reason. It's because I was always that person who was curious about people, interested in connection, and prepared to make the bold choice because I believed in it. You know, that's the kind of journey of exploration. What words you put to it, I'm quite ambivalent about, because, you know, it can be helpful to do the sort of write my statement, put it on a post-it note, stick it on my bathroom mirror kind of exercise. But it's not really about that for me. It's about the knowing more than it is about the, like, the branding. That's a different kind of thing. And I want people to go, I feel I know who I really am, and then I can think about what am I going to do with that. Yeah. So, you know, coming back to my sort of principles that you see in the idea of mindset is, I believe that people should be shaping their life and career, one, so that they feel like they have high engagement, they love what they do, they get up in the morning, they go, you know, most days I'm really looking forward to the kind of stuff I do with my life,
yep,
and career. And the second is that it connects deeply with a sense of values and purpose. And sometimes when people go through this journey, they go, now I understand why I don't really connect with my manager, because they don't really share my values, and I've just realized how important that is to me. So what am I going to do about that?
So you've got me thinking, Gary, because obviously as I look around the studio here, I know how I got here, but right, one of the critical questions maybe for me is why?
Right.
Why did this journey start, and actually where is it going? Mm. And so that's something for me to reflect on as well in relation to joining up those dots. And
can we ask you those questions?
You can do. By all means, you can ask me those questions.
So to understand the person you are today, where would we need to start in your story?
Well, it's an interesting one, because I think mine is quite late, because we had an incident in our life which was over a period of about 6 years, which was around my daughter. And it's something I've spoken about.
Yeah.
She's been into the studio. It was an episode that was never released, but mm-hmm, it was cathartic. And I went on to another podcast called Men's Stories. And in short, this was a period of time when my daughter was growing up who had mental health issues which were not identified or treated properly. And as a result, those led to addiction and rehab.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was a very, very difficult time. So there's a series, or there's an event in life which I think has defined us as a family, yeah, and set me off on a path in relation to. So in some ways, I think the podcast became a coping mechanism,
mm-hmm,
but also a passion to unlock human-centered leadership, to unlock human being over human doing,
mm-hmm,
and also to start to really look at how do you help people cope, mm-hmm, in a world that is pretty brutal, in a, mm-hmm, way of working that is pretty brutal. And then if you add a little bit of personal challenge into that as well, mm-hmm, then you've got quite an interesting challenge for people. So that's me trying to articulate almost the podcast has become a real mechanism to drive the curiosity and so to see starts, if it can help.
Yeah, so it starts in a really personal moment for you.
I think so.
When you think about this idea of an unlocked moment of remarkable clarity, when you suddenly knew a thing you didn't know before and you remember exactly where you were when you had it, what comes to mind for you?
I think it's interesting. I'm not sure, but I think there's one I've already spoken about, which is that very clear moment where I'm driving. It's a beautiful summer's day, driving, sun, roof is down, daughter sat next to me, she's got her earbuds in, and actually we're driving to rehab. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing I see is, because I'm not allowed in, is I'm driving away and all I can do is see in the rearview mirror her going into that facility for 28 days. And I'm thinking to myself, how did we get here? And I felt powerless. And then there's a degree of shame, and there's a degree of anger, all of those, mm-hmm, that you might associate with being a parent. And I think at that point, we started to understand that And she's doing great now, by the way, thriving, diving in Thailand, and a very different person. But that was quite a brutal time for everyone, the entire family. And I think now there's an element of live your best life and don't wait for just tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Just start to live your best life right now and make decisions that will fuel that best life. I don't know. That's me rambling slightly, Gary, but does that make sense in relation to...
In that moment, driving the car, looking in the rearview mirror, watching your daughter go into rehab, what did you know then, in that moment, that you didn't know before? What was clear to you then?
See, that's a really interesting one. I'm not sure what the answer to that question is yet, Gary. What did I know then that I didn't know beforehand? I don't know. Maybe it's that you actually, sometimes you, there's an element of vulnerability. I spoke to someone about this, is where you understand almost what you need in order to survive and thrive, but then it's having the confidence to ask other people for help. You can get to a point in life where you have to ask other people for help. You can't deal with it yourself. You just don't have the mechanism or the tools to actually do it. You have to then abdicate responsibility to somebody else. And in some ways, that's leaving the most precious thing you have, is your child, with somebody else, and driving away and thinking, I have to trust that process. So there's an element of that. And that's a tough for me as well, because obviously I spent my life within the criminal justice system and trying to support other people, or fighting good versus bad, whatever it might be, or even as a cop.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these, I suppose, are dots I haven't joined up yet.
And I hear that. The vulnerability is an interesting word in that. And for people watching and listening to this, you know, they will hear what I'm hearing, which is at least two things. One is, you know, this is deep emotional, real stuff.
Yep.
And real unlock moments feel and sound like that. You know, feel like this is important, tough stuff. The second is, it's something that you haven't figured out. You know, when people go, oh yeah, I know what my moment was, it was, that's not your unlock moment.
Right.
It's the one where you go, it takes you to a different place. You go, you know, you've thought many times, I'm sure, about that episode before, but the moment of knowing was the moment, you know, the one you talked about was looking in the rearview mirror. And I think we can all empathize with what that must have felt like. And the knowing is not, my daughter's going to rehab. My knowing is about vulnerability and not having the answers, not having necessarily
Not being in control. Yeah.
I understand much more now. So, you know, I've been a great fan of your work and seen many of your conversations about human-centered leadership, which is lovely. And suddenly now, having heard you talk about that, now I understand why you're doing this. Because many people are doing this because, you know, it's an important topic, it's a zeitgeist topic, whatever, but you're doing this because it's personal.
And I say to people, what comes out of my mouth a lot in the sessions I do, as I say, leadership is deeply personal.
Right.
And I never forget something that was said to me by my mentor, who unfortunately passed away. He had a massive impact on me. And when I got my first leadership role, and I talk about this, I've written about this, he said to me, remember, the children of the people you lead will know your name.
Right.
In what context is up to you. And I lead with that all the time. And I have many senior audiences who say, oh my God, that's so true. My kids know my boss's name.
Right.
It's the same for me. Right. And I say to them, this is, please understand that when we talk about leadership and culture, and there are many models and theories, etc., I say, this is personal. Just understand that. And if you don't care, please don't lead.
And
that's almost the foundation for the work that I do.
And a question I've started asking to people, which not everyone's got an answer for, but it's a really interesting question to ask, is having thought about those two things, where you start and that unlock moment, is there anything that is clearer to you now than 15 minutes ago?
I think, I don't know about whether it's clearer now than 15 minutes ago, but I think what I'm trying to do is to live that more as a leader now within an organization, and to understand that I have an impact on other people, even those people that I don't lead, and to try and be congruent and try and catch myself in the act of not quite living what I talk about.
Yeah.
So I think I'm more deliberate in relation to trying to be congruent.
Yeah.
And I think I'm catching myself more often now to say, hang on, I'll stop you there, Adam, in my tracks and thinking that doesn't really marry up. So maybe there's an element of accountability. And without a doubt, there's a drive for this podcast is not just a thing, a hobby. Mm. It's actually become a conduit to have these incredible conversations. I don't know whether you find, but I find that you have a very intimate hour with someone when you meet them in the podcast. And actually, you build up a bond with them far beyond many people get a chance to build a bond with someone. Yeah. And I think a lot of people have sat where you're sat and said, I didn't expect to have that kind of conversation.
Yeah. For me, it makes complete sense because it always feels like this. It always feels like this. And I think that the thing that bugs me a bit about leadership development, today is that at one level, this stuff is all known. Like people understand that it's important to be connected with your values and be authentic as a leader and think about people's whole selves because there's so many books that say it.
Yep.
They also say the recipes for doing it, which I don't like so much the recipes. But I feel like the missing link is, I think there are not so many leaders who really get it, who really understand it. Some very interesting research that Gallup did a year or two ago, I think it was published. And they said, if you take 10 people in the population and you look at their underlying talents and strengths for leadership, for natural leadership, one of the 10 is a really natural leader that you don't really need to train or develop them. They just instinctively do it really well. Another 2 of the 10 have got the basic underlying talents to be able to be great leaders, but they need coaching, training, development to become great.
Right.
7 of the 10 shouldn't lead because they don't have the underlying talents and strengths to be a great leader, even with development. And then they said, how often do organizations place the natural leaders in the positions of leadership? And they said, most of the time not. It's about 83% of leaders, I think that's the right number, about 83% of leaders in organizations don't have the underlying talents and strengths. So they can learn the habits, they can learn the choreography of leadership, but it's not really authentic to them. Right. And then suddenly you'll meet somebody who is one of those really natural leaders and you'll go, I don't know why there are so many books published because it's so easy. It's so easy when you meet that person. They just instinctively do it. So what I love and I love about the work you're doing too with human-centered leadership is to say, we're not doing this as a recipe. We're not doing this as a framework or as a model, as a management development tool. We're doing this to say, connect with actually who you are and think about some of these actual things that have been in your life that have shaped who you are as a leader. Really what your underlying values and purposes, not the ones you think you're supposed to have. I speak to quite a lot of people where they can quote all of the leadership books. I don't want to hear that. I met somebody recently who's going to be a great leader. And I said, my advice to you is to stop reading leadership books because you're just telling me what everybody else thinks is a great leader. But when I look at your background and experience, you've got so much great stuff. Write your own book. And he's a person who'd written quite a thick book, which was a sort of aggregation of many other books. And I went, write a thin book, but it's actually you and actually your book. And kind of that's the thing that I want to say to leaders is like, through this journey, through thinking about some of these things that are really important to you, have been your memorable moments in life or career. And as I say, not the moments that you look back on and say, that was a big day in my life. It's not that. It's the day when you knew something. It might be a day you've never thought about before and you go, I was in that cafe. Looking at that dog and this thought, that was it. That's when I knew I was going to quit my job. That's when I knew I had agency. That's the time. That's the time that really connects with who you are. Yeah. It wasn't you opening the door and your daughter getting out to go to rehab. The moment for you was driving away. And looking in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. It's that I remember, and I remember it very, very well. And in some ways, my subconscious now might do the trick and I'll end up having you say that unlock moment. But that is, without a doubt, that's fueling a lot of what I do now and the passion for these conversations. Anyone listening to this, how do they get in touch with you, Gary, and continue the conversation, get you involved in what they're doing and their teams? How can we connect the dots?
So my website's garycrotez.com.
Yep.
And very happy to connect to people on LinkedIn as well. The Unlock Moment podcast is on theunlockmoment.com and available on all the major podcast platforms on YouTube as well. And reach out and connect. I love to chat and connect with people about Unlock Moments.
And also the books. I'm assuming Amazon will do the trick.
Right? Amazon and all great bookstores have the Idea Mindset. And again, theideamindset.com gets you to the book.
Brilliant. Well, Gary, I hope you've had fun coming into the studio. Amazing. As a seasoned podcaster yourself, I hope this has been fun for you too.
It's been fantastic. Thanks so much. You know, exceeded all my expectations.
No, it's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.